Hi, this is Diti Feito, a podcast produced by Teatro do Bairro Alto, TBA, where talking is doing and vice versa. I am Ana Bigot Vieira, Discourse Curator, TBA. And discourse means conferences, talks, publication, research and the like, but also everything which, often not explicitly, shapes what we do, what we say and what we see. Today, Diti Feito listens to José Afonso's song Utopia as it resonates with the poet Miguel Cardoso, lending an ear to a handful of concepts by the cultural critic Mark Fisher. Let's listen.
Utopia, Portugal, 1983. What does it sound like?
Cidade. Sem muros nem ameias, gente igual por dentro, gente igual por fora, onde a folha da palma afaga a cantarinha. Cidade do homem, não do lobo, mas irmã. Capital da alegria, braço que dorme nos braços do rio, toma o fruto da terra, é teu, a ti o deves lá sozinho. Desafio. Lançou teu desafio. Homem que olhas nos olhos que não negas, o sorriso, a palavra forte e justa. Homem, para quem o nada disto custa, será que existe lá para as margens do Oriente este rio, este rumo, esta gaivola? Como deverei seguir na minha rota?
It doesn't quite crackle with enjoyment, does it? To borrow a phrase Mark Fisher uses about Siouxsie and the Banshees' single Fireworks of 1982, roughly the contemporary of Zeca Afonso's album, as a celebration of the colourful and the collective. And it sounds like this. You'd be hard-pressed to find a song that crackles with so much enjoyment as this, writes Fisher. The phrase is also a nod to the very concrete and quasi-conceptual crackle that Fisher places at the heart of his sonic hauntology, a term which, to be brief, accounts for the ways in which the past and its lost futures persist and return to haunt the present and trouble linear time. Crackle unsettles the very distinction between surface and depth, between background and foreground. In sonic hauntology, we hear that time is out of joint, he writes in The Metaphysics of Crackle. So, with this in mind, what can we say about Zeca Afonso's Utopia? Some background first. I told myself as I began thinking about how to make the song resonate and spill its historical and ideological beans. I found myself bogged down in background soon enough. It is, I would guess, difficult to find in the Anglophone world a musical figure as lauded and as loaded as Zé Afonso or Zeca Afonso, one so seemingly entangled in the country's history, the 1974 revolution to be brief, and so much a part of the texture, at least the sonic texture, of its remembrance. About his song, Grândola Vila Morena, one could almost say, it's how the revolution sounds, for better or for worse. As to Utopia, I hope I can do some justice to its truth content and bring to light what I sense are the not-so-personal contradictions of my enjoyment. I did come round to enjoyment, it seems. Some crackle to come and more time out of joint than we can handle. So, Utopia, 1983. For now, I'd like to run through some of its motifs, some of which are quite common in the utopian or pastoral mode. It's utopia as an emphatic elsewhere, somewhere towards the east perhaps, a land of plenty. But note how the exotic is cast in the mould of the familiar, where the palm leaf strokes, ever so gently as it were, the stonework. Not only on the side of solidarity against competition, brother, not wolf, but against separation in a wider sense, on the side of the concrete and the commensurable, the at hand, as opposed to abstraction. A Sunday of the world, where nothing conspires against us. Boundless, yet seemingly contained or enclosed, we imagine it soaked in a warm, soft light, comforting, therefore, rather than disquieting, but to the point, I think, where it flips quite easily into its opposite. Hope into hopelessness, all the more bitter for its sweetness. It's 1983, after all. The future it offers has a face turned towards the past. It's 1983, after all. A future past that never was, never came to be. It's a song about the revolution seen through a telescope, but the other way around. But since it's 1983, one may say that it evades history, hides from the then-present, yet is a painfully clear product of it. And you can hear it all in the grain of Zeca Afonso's voice, as Fisher might have put it. You can hear it all in the grain of Robert Smith's voice, he wrote. One of these days, I was listening to the album Como Se Fora Seu Filho on YouTube, and I scrolled down to the commentary box where I found one comment that said something along these lines. I recommend that you listen to this record at half speed so you can get a real sense of the trembling in Zeca's voice. Didn't offer any explanation as to the content of this trembling or the significance of this experience, as if it was self-evident. Perhaps it is at some level. Hopefully you're getting something of the tingling sensation I got when I read it. A recognition, of course, Zeca's distinctively quivering voice, but also, the perceptible tremors of a dialectical knot waiting to be untangled. The voice, all too human, rendered almost inhuman, fetishistically abstracted from the studio, but through technological manipulation, at half speed. Aura and reproduction, artifice and symptom, my kind of goosebumps. I shudder to think, as the phrase goes. Because it had it all, this comment. I was reminded of those shaky, eerie, slowed-down images of the first week of the revolution that appear in O Bom Povo Português. The ghoulish, warped sound that accompanied them. was 1981 after all. I won't spend much time on these tremors, but you can hear it all in Zeka's voice, can't you? Am I hearing voices within the voice? Hollenbach asks at some point in his essay The Grain of the Voice. Well, hopefully. Anyway, it's 1983. Except perhaps it's not that simple. Zeka Afonso's work as a whole is not only entangled in a political moment, the 1974 revolution, and its befores and afters, the dictatorship, the revolutionary period, but also to this day in the politics of commemoration. With the revolution as both, somewhat paradoxically, a consensual and a bitterly contested terrain. The glaring example of this entanglement is Grenoble Villa Morena, which not only holds a special place in the imaginary of the revolution, but played a practical role on the very day of the revolution, on the dawn of the 25th of April of 1974. Having been banned by state censorship, it was played on the radio as the second signal to announce that the coup was on. It became, as I suggested, the revolution's unofficial anthem. I was thinking about the best way of contextualizing the song Utopia, while at the same time bringing to light the effective and conceptual stakes behind my choice of this song for the session, of the way to give you a sense, that is, of where the personal and the collective touch its many knots and layers, of what Zeka Afonso's music stirs in me in all its contradictions, of where it places me as a political subject rather than just merely a listener, of feeling both energized and, let's say, trapped. Utopia voices a restlessness, an unfulfilled collective dream, but in the reassuring tones of the familiar, not to say the ever same. A heritage, a lineage, a continuation. To explain all this, let me paint you a picture. Just over a year ago, midnight, on the cusp of the 25th of April, I was standing in a crowd singing Grenoble Villa Morena. Then I sang a few more songs, chatted with a few friends, drank a few more beers, faffed about, and headed home. This after having heard the very same song being sung and singing it collectively earlier that day, the 24th, at the close of an official ceremony by one of Lisbon's boroughs. And then, the day after, the 25th, I sang it again alongside other songs, as I do every year, meeting friends along the way, holding posters, shouting slogans. The day ended for me in Casa da Achada, which, among many other things, has a choir with a vast repertoire of international protest as well as folk songs, which often sing in demonstrations, not to mention occupations. As an example, the occupation of a building in Rue de Saint-Lazare, not coincidentally, on April 25th, 2012. On this day, i.e. the 25th of April 2022, Casa da Achada hosted a concert by Casal do Leste, my favorite song of which is Canção da Jorna, the lyrics of which are from a poem by Carlos Oliveira, a heterodox neorealist poet, the original title of which is Song of Hate. And it begins, "The love of harboring hatred so pleases my heart." And it sounds like this. Like there was no tomorrow. After the concert was over, I sang a few more songs, chatted with a few friends, drank a few more beers, faffed about, and headed home. There was tomorrow, it turns out. What role does this ritual repetition play? The contradiction being, very briefly, the extent to which Zeca Afonso's songs in this context, Grândola in particular, but it applies to a lesser extent to Utopia, both open and close. They are part of the commemoration of April at its most domesticated or purely symbolic, while at the same time being an element of forms of conviviality, solidarity and political culture. They allow for contact to be made, following a Fisherian line here, between affects, concepts, commitments that would have otherwise been locked into private space. So, Zeca Afonso's music, to this day, often exists beyond the space of individual consumption. And yet, as it played over and over and over in these commemorations, I do find myself asking, is there no alternative? It holds a space that is both materially embedded, as things are bound to be, and idealist, one might say. Does holding this space, holding onto it, and holding off, however momentarily, the forces that threaten to tear it apart, contribute to the production of another, more expanding space? As opposed, I guess, to a kind of inertial, phatic function. We're still here. Are we here now? What are we listening for? Where are we listening for? For the collective, its shapes and inclinations, its senses and declinations need to be felt and practiced rather than merely conceived of or thought. The privatization of affect is not simply a conceptual error that can be dispelled once we recognize or become wise to its tricks and mechanisms. Caught in the familiar, both cozy and cathartic bubble, I find myself asking, is there room for more? Is there room for rage? Because I'm caught, as I think many are, between resisting the dismantling of certain social structures and structures of feeling at the hands of capitalism, and a fiercer, almost blind will to dismantle. Another way of putting it, moving now to a more modest scale and directing this question back to Utopia, where does it fit in the struggle over the means of perception, as Mark Fisher asked? Because one should be more than modest in claims about the role of music in the struggle over the means of production. And because, of course, politically, whatever we may feel is missing when inside the fold of Zeca Afonso's songs cannot be blamed on the songs. It isn't that music is lagging behind politics. Politics itself is missing, Fisher wrote. In fact, that politics, the revolution, is both what is missing and what is being missed in the space where Zeca Afonso's Utopia moves. But does it crackle? Time was most definitely out of joint. Futures had most certainly been lost. So, is there still in the song something undischarged, some unrealized content that can emerge and resonate? What happens when we press it against the present? These reflections and questions will hopefully allow us to go back to the studio, so to speak, and listen to the space-time generated in Utopia. The various distances it negotiates and the ones we negotiate as we listen, the then, the now, the all over again, the not yet. To listen to this with different ears and bodies. But some more background first. In 1974-75 in Portugal, while music played its barely autonomous role, it's fair to say that people's libidinal investments, their kicks, their antagonisms, their frustrations and exhilarations were elsewhere, in the revolutionary process itself, in both its realities and promises. And this, of course, was the content of the come down in the late 70s and early 80s, and the ground of its particular, particularly painful brand of dyschronia. What was missing, what was being mourned, was the revolution, rather than, say, the revolutionary tumult of the post-punk era or its capacity for annihilation, for producing new potentials through the negation of what already exists, as Fisher writes. Of course, it wasn't linear to begin with. While development emerged as one of the key words of the post-revolutionary period, announcing a modernizing break with the past, namely with the dictatorship's time-frozen image of the people and projections of collective future, development was emphatically uneven and cultural representations of the era scrambled the implied sense of a linear evolutionary timeline. Go forward? Catch up with what? Time itself becomes a politically resonant topic very soon after the revolution, one that comes to the fore quite explicitly in the ethnographic Return to the Roots in both cinema and music, Zac Afonso being a key player in the latter. Not so much a return, at least in the best cases, but rather a secret appointment or agreement with previous generations, as Benjamin put it. Previous generations and future ones, of course, a sidestepping of the machinery of positivistic history. For example, musicians and filmmakers rushing, once again, to distant, rural Trás-os-Montes, the back of beyond. This, as someone said at the time, was our brand of science fiction. There was a lot of time traveling. The popular, in this sense, was a way of unearthing social and cultural, narrative, linguistic, musical forms, pushed aside by both the official ideology of the dictatorship and by the push for a modern, bourgeois, political and cultural sphere. I'm perhaps being too generous, but among other things, it was a way of resisting the repression and elision of temporal and spatial encodings of existence other than that offered by capitalist modernization. And so the late 70s and early 80s were ghostly, precisely to the extent that the triumphal car of objective tendencies was designed to trample over, or if we want to put it more mildly, contain the remnants of the collective experiments of the revolutionary period, which came to an end in November 1975. This was the so-called democratic normalization, conceived quite explicitly as a reality check. We are back on track in the ordinary course of things. Okay, capital, let's kiss and make up. Buzzkilling of the highest order. People, the people, if you will, should return to their place, their homes, their private lives. Temporality is streamlined, its spectrum narrowed. The party's over. And by party, of course, I mean occupied factories, self-management and workers' control, land reform, etc. If one listened carefully to this era, one could probably hear the awe of revolution being pulled down as the slogan that marked the 30-year celebration or disavowal of the revolution in 2004. April is evolution. So it's 1983. The revolution is now once upon a time. The public sphere in Portugal was acutely aware, perhaps still is, of this process of the present being a sorting through different temporalities, that one can scan and stress time differently. It is against this background that the album Como Se For a Seu Filho emerges in 1983. Papusa, the first song of the album, is very explicitly a song about PREC, the ongoing revolutionary period.
Borges e o Pinão já emitiu Milhares balançando A revolução é para já.
As he introduces it in the 1983 live concert at Coliseu, that wondrous time where to be a citizen meant more than just casting a vote. A time where the people were actually, or were in the process of becoming, he adds, a subject of history. But the year the album was released also coincided with Zac Afonso being diagnosed with ALS, amyotrophic lateral sclerosis, and so with his last few concerts. In particular, one that resulted in the album Ao Vivo no Coliseu, which was also registered and aired by the state television RTP. This means that Como Se For a Seu Filho ended up half forgotten, hidden behind the disease and the quasi-mythical, both celebratory and heavy-hearted nature of this concert. Utopia was sung in that concert, but polemically it was cut from the TV version alongside four other songs as well as many of Zac Afonso's extended commentaries. In an open letter published in the newspaper about the version of the concert that RTP showed, claiming it censored the concert, Utopia is explicitly mentioned. We all heard and hummed the troubled history of our recent years when the future was still waiting for us in the tranquil hope of that amazing song that is Utopia, one of those that RTP cut, the letter says. What other chant better embodies the hope that we still harbour in these times of recession and disenchantment? Back to the song then, and back to the obvious. The song is called Utopia, Utopia. It immediately runs the risk of being folded all too neatly inside its title and perhaps filed as a kind of toothless, ultimately conformist form of wishful thinking. All the more so since musically it seems to match an accepted form of the mournful yet hopeful intervention song. It's the early 1980s, after all. There's still some unpacking to do here. In fact, the song was commissioned 2 years earlier by the theatre group A Barraca for the play Fernão Mendes by Hélder Costa, a musical adaptation or gloss of the 16th century picaresque, anti-epic travel chronicle Peregrinação by Fernão Mendes Pinto. Alongside other songs, five from Zeca Afonso, all of which would later be part of this album, it was sung on stage by four actor musicians. So it is originally, if you will, in its theatrical life, at a remove from everyday life as part of a play, at a remove from the then-present moment set in a semi-fictional 16th century, and yet as part of an art form that, particularly in that context, is predicated on presence, materially and symbolically rooted, ethically and politically grounded in the living presence of bodies, as well as in the more or less provisional community which this presence establishes. In the play, it appears in between a shipwreck and the voyage to the city of Nanjing. It is a song then about searching for a kind of paradise on earth. More than four centuries removed, it tells of the search for a spatial utopia, as Alfred Engelmeyer wrote. In the play, that is. In the album and other contexts, it becomes a temporal one. More than another place, another time. Though, of course, it may have to be translated back into space now, squeezed awkwardly into the apparent absence of an elsewhere of capital. It's 2023, after all. But let's say that it's 1983. And in 1983, and why not in 2023, if hope there is, and if this is a song about hope, what does hope sound like? Zeca Afonso's voice, first. That drawn out cidade.
Cidade.
Somehow both full and estranged, sepulchral. It sounds removed or enclosed, reverberating as if sung from the bottom of a well or shouted into an enormous clay pot. Reverb in the voice track, then. Then it only takes a couple of seconds before we hear something in the background, a sustained chord. Not. For a long time, I thought that it was generated by a synthesizer, a synth pad, but it's actually Carlos Zingro's violin. It doesn't drown the voice and comes to the fore louder in between the verses and then recedes once again into the sonic background. Though there is some progression, or at least variation, these two elements remain constant throughout. There are some slight changes in the tone and pace of the voice. Later, a guitar and other voices in harmony with Zeca's uplifting it. Now, the voice, I would say, feels or sounds absent in different ways. Absent for us, in the sense that it seems to come from far away. Also, somehow absent from the sonic space in which it exists. Perhaps I should rather say that the sonic space creates this absence. And then it's absent from the place it speaks of, Utopia. Well, it's 1983, or is it 2023? This is too direct a link with Fisher, perhaps, but to quote him, part of the reason why hauntology should appeal to us now is that unconsciously and increasingly consciously, we suspect that something has died. Well, it's 1983. the revolution is, let's say, undead. Thinking of these thens and nows, I remembered what Amedy Baraka wrote about Coltrane on the sleeve notes to The New Wave in Jazz, a live album recorded on March 28, 1965, at the Village Gate in New York, just a little over a month after Malcolm X's assassination. He says, "You would say to him, listening to his own projection of mysticism, that's the way it was told to me. But the album is also heavy evidence that something is really happening now." He's not just talking about what is happening in music or in the musical scene, of course. As to Utopia, well, it's 1983, Portugal. Something really happened. It's in the process of unhappening. In this unhappening, this utopia has no place. I know it's the very definition of it, but every unhappening revolution is unhappy in its own way. I said it was a song about hope, though. It's complicated. I guess that here, now, progress will not take us anywhere we want to go. So perhaps not such a bad idea to shuttle back and forth between "that's how it was told to me" and "whatever now there is." Smash them against each other. See what happens. But why am I telling you all this? You can hear it all in the grain of Zeka's voice. It crackles.
Dito e Feito é o podcast do Teatro do Bairro Alto. A edição sonora é do Pedro Macedo, Framed Films. A música é de Raw Forest. Acompanhe o TBA nas redes sociais e em teatrodobairroalto.pt.